Welcome to That 80s Show. The 80s is gonna get ya every single time, Dory.
Carla.
Oh, nothing like having a panic as you're about to go live and the song you planned doesn't play and you go, what am I gonna do? Miami Sound Machine once again comes to my rescue, said Mr. Furley on every episode of Four's Company. The less successful follow up to Three's Company, where a Mormon family moved into the apartment. So, Dory, how are you this week?
Like 2 minutes into the show and you've already gone surreal on me. What are we going to do with you?
Didn't you see that one? Didn't you see that series? Four episodes. Four episodes deep. Dory, shame.
Yes.
I know my name. I was today years old when I found out something that I should have known. I've just sent you a picture. I did not know this. So, shared with us, fans of the show, anytime you want to get in touch with us, That 80 Show SA on Facebook. Although I think we're going to kill Facebook because it's not where the cool people are. No one's engaging with us.
Where the old people like me are.
But the oldies don't engage. They don't give you the likes, the tweets. When I look at the stats, I don't see graphs going up. I just see graphs of things. But anyway, it shared with me. Happy 60th birthday to Anthony Charles Edwards, right?
Right.
It was his birthday, yes. July 19th. Now, you may not know Anthony Charles Edwards. You will know him, probably not by his name, but by his face. But the thing that I did not realize, this is how I was today years old. Anthony Charles Edwards, his last massive role, he was in ER in the 90s, one of the less good-looking doctors. He was Goose on Top Gun, but he was also the main nerd in Revenge of the Nerds. I did not know this. I did not know that. You see, did you know? What am I lying about?
No.
Dory, I've just sent you the picture, okay? Think of Revenge of the Nerds.
That's not the same person. Is that the same person?
It is the same person, Dory. Why would internet fans lie to me? Revenge of the Nerds. So, we know him from Goose, from Top Gun, right? He's Goose. He's not Val Kilmer or Tom Cruise, or Tom Cruise's ego, right?
Yes.
He is then.
I love ER, so I know him very well from ER.
Yes.
And he's been in a few little things since then, but yes, as you say, very little few things, so yeah.
He is Gilbert Lowe in Revenge of the Nerds, one of the main nerds. We're going to post that picture up on That 80s Show SA Facebook page, the last roll of the dice to try get some love out of that page. But shame.
Okay, come on, listeners, give our Facebook page some love or else it's going to go away and I like it.
Give it a like because else we'll do TikTok story.
Keep it for myself.
Keep it for yourself. You got
to. I'm too old to TikTok. My knees TikTok when I stand up.
Oh, indeed. Dory, Mike and the Mechanics, they're doing good things. So obviously the past few weeks, we've been talking about 80s songs, Metallica, Kate Bush, Sonic Youth, all of them. Their songs are all back in the hit parades, and they're making nice money for themselves. Go, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're no longer relevant. Rewind concerts only come around every summer. How am I going to make money? Mike and the Mechanics, they're doing something good. They have taken an alternate version of their hit song from the 80s, Silent Running, and it's now being used to raise funds for Ukrainian refugees. So that's good things. We like people doing good things. If you don't remember the song, I'm going to play you a quick little bit of it. You remember this is Mike and the Mechanics' Silent Running. Remember that? Good stuff. All is from Mike and
the
Mechanics.
That's actually the only song of theirs I like.
I should have looked into this. I can't remember many of the songs.
You must know the Living Years is their biggest song, which I hate.
That's the one. It's schmaltz. I don't think I hate that song for itself. I think I hate what post-80s we've done with it. Because whenever you see it, it's normally used in something like quite 80s, but like so schmaltzy, right? So I think good song. Good song on merit.
We had the cassette. The cassette
tape of,
you know, that whole album. And Silent Running is the only good song.
Okay. Well, now it is a song for good. Because there is an acoustic version, right? And it's just piano and just the lyrics. And so it's been on all the streaming platforms, and they decided to say, you know what, because of the words, especially like a line, take the children and yourself and hide out in the cellar, it's actually become quite poignant to Ukrainian refugees and quite a bit of like a anthem for them. So they heard about this and they decided, you know what, we're going to release it, and all the proceeds will go to helping Ukrainian refugees, which is good. That's a good thing to do. So far they've raised, I saw something, they've raised a lot of money through Ukrainian Appeal. This whole appeal that this organization is doing, they've so far raised £13 million for Ukrainian refugees, and of course this song, all the proceeds. So you know what, get on it, and if you have a chance to buy that song, it's on all major platforms, buy it because it's for a good cause. And the acoustic version, the version that they're actually selling, is heartbreaking shit. Like, it's so sad.
I'll make an effort to listen to that because I don't know it.
Yeah.
But I will. I'm sure I'll like it.
Very sad.
I like acoustic versions of songs that I already like generally. So
Who doesn't like it? You know sometimes you go on like YouTube and there's like all these kids singing like acoustic versions of 80s songs, which I normally hate. But sometimes you got to go, oh, that's not bad. That's pretty good. You kind of get it.
One of the best ones is, and I cannot for the life of me right now remember the song name, but it's like Gorillaz, one of their most famous songs. And there's an acoustic version of it. It is so good.
Oh, really?
You don't even realize it's the same song at first. It's so good.
What's your thoughts of when they take, and you normally get it with those like female singers with their sad little voices, and they take like a really happy 80s song and just make it like deathly sad. Like they take Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, but like sing it with like jazzy sounds. And like, oh my God, this song, I don't want to wait. I never want to get out of bed again if this was the original song. If you heard those, what's your thoughts on those?
You know, people must do what they want to do, and we don't have to like everything. But sometimes it actually is cool. Speaking of different versions of Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, I am a few episodes into The Boys.
Oh, right.
Have you seen that one where there's a Spanish version of Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go?
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Is it after...
How many episodes have you...
How many episodes have you watched?
You finished it. You missed it.
No. Is it close? Is it close to the scene from episode 1, 8 minutes in, that I told you do not watch?
No. And I did watch it, and it was horrifically wonderful.
God, no, I can't.
I enjoyed it.
Dory,
I knew I would.
Is it Wham singing it, or is it somebody else? Oh, no, Wham didn't sing Spanish.
No. So it's not Wham singing it, I'm pretty sure. It's that scene where they flash back to when they're in, is it Nicaragua? The army base.
Oh.
And then...
Is it this?
That would be it.
That's a nightmare. What the fuck was that? You know, we'll put the link. Don't listen to it. That is like, it's bad karaoke. That, what is this from El Dragon?
I thought the fact that it was there was kind of cool. Like, I was like, ah, cool.
Nicaragua. I don't. You know what? There's certain parts that I skipped through because you get that. You're like, oh, it's too many characters. This person's irrelevant. But I missed out. I'm kind of glad I did. I got to be honest. I'm not gonna.
No. How can you skip through bits of The Boys? Oh my God.
What they did to
after
me.
After a while, the exploding heads get like yawn. But still.
Okay, well, look, I skipped through. I missed that. My 80s moments of the week in my life, my daughter's school doing a school production, you know, and everything that goes with it. But they had Club Tropicana. They played Club Tropicana in one part of it. And like halfway through, when everyone settled down, like everyone's comfortable, you're in the show now, it's not like interval or not like finding your seats, everyone's there to enjoy it, they play Take On Me, right? Because you don't start with Take On Me, you put it in the middle, okay? Or encore it, because everyone waits. You do not start with Take On Me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
We've never heard you say that before, ever.
No. And, got some good feedback last week. People saying they loved us playing the new Take On Me, or the new Aha song, rather. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So I wonder if, every now and again, maybe we should just slip in a new song from one of our favorite 80s artists.
If they're good. They are rarely good.
Yeah, true, true that. Mm. But if you want to hear from some of your favorite 80s artists, either on our feed or a feed called The Celeb Savant, where our good friend Barrett, the Chart Savant, is always interviewing artists from the 80s, finding out what they're up to.
And beyond the 80s.
And beyond the 80s.
He steps out of the
80s. On Celeb Savant, he does.
All things.
Yeah, all things. So when the stuff on our feed, that 80s show, you'll find 80s stuff. But then Celeb Savant, it is out of the 80s, which they appreciate sometimes, I think. And we're like, well, that's not what we're here for. You do what we want to do. We work up at U.S. Mountain Time to interview you, so you will talk about what we want to talk about. U.S. Mountain Time's a thing, eh? I thought, geez, if you're talking time zones, if you live in U.S. Mountain Zone, that's a big time difference to South Africa, I've got to tell you. It's not our friend. It's not our friend. Dory.
No.
Someone scared the shit out of me. Always scared the shit out of me since the 80s. I love Ghostbusters. Obviously, we had the Stave Puff Man. We had Slimer. There was the librarian ghost in the beginning, and then Razul, Gazul, Sigourney Weaver, all of that, that whole thing. The dogs, remember the dogs, even before they did new CGI on it. Didn't scare me as much as Viggo the Carpathian. Do you remember who that was?
No.
Viggo the Carpathian, Ghostbusters 2, the guy in the painting. Do you remember that? So in Ghostbusters 2, that guy, right?
I just forgot his name.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Viggo the Carpathian. If you need a memory jog, and we are elderly, if we listen to the show and it's relevant to you, you may need a bit of a memory jog, is that it was a painting, a museum. They put up this painting. It had a story about it, and the painting possessed people, right? And anybody that came across possessed people made everyone hate, and they spewed hate from the sewers and made everyone hate each other, and then Ghostbusters made everyone love each other, and then Viggo the Carpathian came to life, came out the painting towards the end. Spoiler alert, but if you haven't watched Ghostbusters 2 by now, I've got no hope for you. So the dude...
I must watch Ghostbusters 2 again, watch it. I think.
You got to watch it, and then watch Ghostbusters, the new one, a.k.a. Ghostbusters Stranger Things, because it's Ghostbusters... Oh. Yeah. Ghostbusters Afterlife, and one of the kid with the black hair, I think Mike, he's in it, and they're in a small town that's kind of like 50s-ish, and it's kind of like Stranger Things. It's a nice filler if you've watched Stranger Things and you need that vibe in your life. There's even a little girl. So Ghostbusters Afterlife is a good Stranger Things-like aperitif. Aperitif, that's what it'll be, a viewing aperitif. Yes. Right.
So, and I must recommend, if you do like Stranger Things and also want to like kind of laugh about it, bad lip reading of Stranger Things on YouTube is a winner.
I mean, that whole thing, and I know you shared it as well, about the subtitles, the guy who's doing the subtitles for Stranger Things.
Yes.
Has got a cult following of his own, because his subtitles are hilarious. What... squelches rhythmically.
Squelching tentacles, or tentacles squelching loudly, or I can't remember, but yeah, something like that.
So bad lip reading and subtitles on Stranger Things are the thing. So Viggo the Carpathian, that's who he is. Wasn't a real person, made up character for it. But the dude who played Viggo the Carpathian was evil as shit. Okay.
Really?
You gotta listen to this. It's played by a German actor, Norbert Grupp, right? But his name was Willem von Homburg. That was his stage name, right? Okay. Because Norbert Grupp is...
This really sounds 10 times more evil.
Yeah, okay. So either Norbert Grupp or Willem von Homburg, right? So he plays Viggo the Carpathian. He was just a real, real bad guy. This is his story. Grew up in like a terrible home. I won't mention the first part of the story because it's quite triggering. But just like fucked up family story, fucked up family background about siblings and whatever. So he comes from like a shit kind of background, right? Born in Berlin, 1940s. So like height of Adolf Hitler's reign, right? So he worked as a meat packer, a stevedore. I don't know what the hell a stevedore is. A butcher, a longshoreman, and a waiter. But by night, him and his father were wrestlers and had a tag team called the Vikings. Okay. It's at this point that he realized that his name, Norbert Grupper, sounded like groupie. He didn't really want it. And that's when he changed to Willem von Homburg. Okay. And then he started boxing under the name of von Homburg, right? And became a decent-ish boxer. Okay. At one point,
yes,
he was ranked as the 7th best boxer in the world in the 60s, right? So he is fighting light heavyweight in the 60s. Yeah. Boxer. And
yep. By the way, a stevedore is a person employed at a dock to load and unload ships. Just helping you out there.
That's disappointing.
Like, doesn't sound nearly as interesting as you thought.
Yeah, I mean, docks is tough. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're offloading docks back then in Nazi Germany. I mean, you're a tough dude. But I imagine something better, like, I don't know, something to do.
I know, because it's similar to Matador, so you imagine something a little bit more interesting.
Like, he fights Stevens. He corrals Stevens. You know, Stevens? Every Steven I know gets out of hand. Go corral the Stevens. So that's a stevedore. So he was stevedore, then he's a boxer, and goes to America, right? And fights, has a few fights in America. People like him. There's one clip that says, you can find it, that's apparently on YouTube. He has an interview, and the interviewer is kind of like, oh, you got knocked out. Oh, you hurt your ankle. Were you really hurt? And just kind of like goading him. And they say the look that he gave this guy is like, if he was not on camera, he would have beat the shit, probably killed the guy. This is like the death look that he'd give people. So people who knew him said, this is how violent he gets, right? So 1970s, he's 30, and he's living in St. Pauli. If you know about this, this is Hamburg's red light district. It is now like quite a cool counterculture hipster place. But 70s, 80s, 90s, it was like the middle of punk culture in Germany, right? So he was middle of it, probably fighting. He hung out with Hell's Angels and pimps. And this isn't... Remember, 80s, how scared we were of the Hell's Angels? Now they do teddy bear runs. We're fucking scared of Hell's Angels. Jesus. I'm just like... Remember.
I mean, I hadn't even come across any Hell's Angels in my life until the 90s. When, do you remember the early Opikopi festival?
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this.
Yes, Opikopi.
So I went to the very, very first Opikopi festival.
Oh, wow.
Which was out in the... God, I'm trying to think where it was. Like, far. Like, now they have it Pretoria side, but it used to be hours.
Yeah.
And it was... The security for the first Opikopi festival was done by the Hell's Angels.
You see what I mean?
And I remember getting there and being very intimidated by them, but then realizing that they were all just a bunch of big teddy bears. They really were.
So that is true, because the Hell's Angels, listen, they do have a nefarious past, right? They were into racketeering, a lot of private protection, like exactly that, protected bands. So informal bodyguarding, private security sector. And like as a kid, if you like stopped at a robot and a Hell's Angel, which basically for our parents, anyone on a motorbike, they called a Hell's Angel. They're like, oh, don't look at them. Lock the doors. It's a Hell's Angel. They're going to drugs. They're going to drug us with their eyes. Like, so people are very afraid of the Hell's Angels, aka anyone on a motorbike in the 1980s. But anyway, this is our friend.
Exactly.
Von Homburg is part of the hung out with Hell's Angels, wasn't part of hung out with pimps, gets arrested, spends some time in jail for trying to sell drugs to an undercover cop. It's a bad idea. Okay, don't sell drugs, less not to cops, less not undercover. So he spends some time in jail and he goes, you know what, let me reset my life. I want to be an actor. First role he gets as a pimp. Do you know this director? The name sounds familiar. Werner Herzog. I'm pretty sure that's a well-known director. Yes. That's gives him his first role. That's who actually gives him. Yeah, you know him. You're a film person. Gives him his first role as a pimp, and he's like, okay, cool. I got the bug. I'm going to Hollywood. He got called the German Mike Tyson, right? They said that's how charismatic he was. Goes to Hollywood, gets cast in Die Hard as a goon. Ends up as a goon, as one of Hans Gruber's henchmen in Die Hard. He gets blown up in an elevator shaft, if you remember that scene. He's one of the goons. He's one of them. Blink and you'll miss him. It's at this time his father falls ill. He hated his father, right? and his stepsister, his sister, depending how you want to interpret the story. He criticizes this as, how the hell can you spend time with that asshole? He ruined our life. I hope he dies. And the father does die. Round about the same time that Ghostbusters is happening, right? Now he's in Ghostbusters, 50 years old, and he plays Viggo the Carpathian. The Carpathian, the most evil creature, the most evil man, I think, bothered me so much, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't.
Pretty bad.
His acting was terrible, so they had to redub his voice, which made him so angry. He was so angry that they took out his voice. And
I see it was dubbed by Max von Sydow, yeah, the famous Swedish actor.
Yes. Yeah, so he was so angry. When they asked the producers of Ghostbusters why did they dub his voice out, they say, I can only say he was a crude, bigoted asshole. That's the experience of working with him.
And yet they put him in the film the rest of the time, and it's all fine.
The rest of the time, and it's all there. And now you think, okay, look, you've been in Ghostbusters. We're about to end into like a nerd era of our culture that... Mm. At the least, you could make quite a decent living doing all the Comic Cons. And you could make, like, novelty appearances in shows. Like, there'll always be something going for you, right? A.K.A. what's the dude who played Flash Gordon? But anyway, that guy. Okay.
Sam something.
Sam Johnson. A.K.A.
Sam Jones?
Sam Jones? Could be. Sam. A.K.A. the Flash Gordon experience. Sam.
The Flash Gordon guy.
Flash Gordon. That's him.
Mm.
Right? You just go do a couple of Comic Cons, photos, signings. You just keep doing that pose forever. And that's going to be a nice little side check. You get residuals from the movies. Like, no problem. That'll be fine. Ends up 1992.
Sam J. Jones.
See, tip of my tongue.
Sam J. Jones.
Common name. Who's gonna, yeah. You know, that's why you got to have a name like Willem von Homburg.
A comeback in Ted.
Yes. you know what I mean? So this is what he could have done. Mm-hmm. But no. Ends up 1992. Right, his last major role. Just after that, he ends up flat broke, living in YMCAs, living in hostels, like squeaking out rent, borrowing money, the suggestions that he's selling drugs again, just absolutely ends up completely destitute and homeless, right?
Well, he was called a crude, bigoted asshole. So yep. That's what happens to crude, bigoted assholes.
That's what happens.
He wants to help them.
I think you can be crude. I think you can be a bigot, and I think you can be an asshole, and probably skate by. All three, done. You know what I mean? No one's going to care for you. And you got to love it. Listen to this, right? So he died in 2004, a bitter man until the very end. He insisted that when he died, nobody tells his sister, right, until 1 month after he had passed, right? So he dies, don't tell me.
She couldn't come to the funeral.
Because he feels as revenge, because when his father died, his sister never told him, because he didn't care. So his sister didn't tell him.
Yeah.
He dies with the message to his sister a month after his death, touche. Like, you didn't tell me. What a dickhead till the end.
What an asshole.
To the end. And probably had something bigoted after that. Touche, bigoted word, just to kind of wrap it all up. That is... the story of Viggo the Carpathian, real name Norbert Grupe, real name Wilhelm von Homburg. What a dick.
Wow.
Bad guy.
I didn't know any of that.
But I got that great story from 80skids.com. All is a great site to go. These are people that do work about the 80s. They do work, they do research, they do proper stuff. And we just take it. And do not claim it as
80s journalism.
80s journalism, the highest form of journalism. New Yorker be damned. Fuck you, New Yorker. 80s journalism, 80s kids. 80s Germanalism. Germanalism? Journalism.
In this case, yes.
About German people. Germanalism. You heard it on that 80s show. So believe it or not, that, even though everything we've spoken about up till now has been about movies, that's not even our 80s movie feature. So
we haven't even started.
Let's get into it. Each week we pick a movie, a TV show, a something about 80s, could be from the 80s. We talk about it and maybe remind you to watch it. Maybe go, my God, that's why I never watched it. Whatever it is, Dari, Pat Benatar me and hit me with your best shot.
I have got, I'm going back to my favorite, Paolo. my favorite genre of movie, which is initially a flop, becomes a cult cast, a cult following horror. What a cult, gets a cult following horror.
Love it.
Yeah, that's me. I am returning to the horror genre. Specifically, you will remember we, a couple of months ago, delved into body horror, melt movies, that type of stuff. Mm. We're making a bit of a return to that side of the world today.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yes. This movie, I can't believe I haven't spoken about it before. Like I say, initially, in fact, let me actually read to you exactly the response to it when it was first, when it first came out. It came out in 1982. The reviews described it as instant junk.
Love
a
it.
Wretched excess.
Yes.
The most hated film of all time, according to a film magazine.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
It did not do well.
Oh, this
the reasons that they were cited for its failure, people said it was because it was the same year that E.T. came out.
Okay.
And they're both sci-fi, and they've got alien content. E.T. was like the feel-good alien movie. You know, it's like lifts you up, and it was all family-friendly movie. And this was the extreme opposite of that, like melty body horror alien make you want to like just die kind of genre. So that they were like, that's why it failed. That's why it failed. But then of course, when it was released on home video,
yes,
it that's where the cult following kind of happened. And now, it is known as one of the best sci-fi horror films ever made.
Things can change. So just remember. If you were awkward in the 80s, if it didn't quite work out for you, just stick it out. The 80s wasn't for everybody. It wasn't for everybody. Some people battle.
You just need to make a VHS tape and you'll be fine.
That's it. Try to keep your clothes on, though. Try to keep your clothes on. Because, but
look at Paris Hilton.
I think she's fine, though. So what's the lesson here?
Pamela Anderson, I think, was a VHS tape.
Yeah. Yeah. Paris Hilton, I think she was a DVD already. I think that's straight.
Something like that. This movie is a John Carpenter film based on a novel from 1938.
Mm-hmm.
You got to love these horror movies that come from like many, many, many decades ago. It is called a science fiction horror, but as I said, it definitely goes into that whole melt body horror genre as well. I'm talking about a movie called The Thing.
Oh, my God, Dory. That is the best movie.
Let me guess. It traumatized you as a child.
No. Yeah, it did. But. No ways. Fuck, that head. Mm-hmm. That with it. Are you going to get into it? It's the head. It's the face thing. Fuck, oh, God, I can't.
There's a few things.
Yes, shit.
But I know when you say the head, I know exactly what you're talking about. The most famous person in this movie is Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
He's probably like the main guy. There's a bunch of, this is an all-male cast. And funnily enough, they did actually remake it in 2011 and made the main star a female because, you know, 2011. But here's the thing about The Thing.
Right.
I didn't watch it in the 80s. Uh-huh. I only watched it probably in the early 2000s.
Oh.
Because my husband made me watch it. It's his kind of favorite genre. And he was like, what? You've never seen The Thing. You've got to watch The Thing. And we watched The Thing. And I was like, wow. I mean, I'm not a horror fan. But you got to appreciate it. Yeah. You really do. Because it's got something to it. And what I like about it the most is the psychological stuff. Because essentially, okay, for anyone who doesn't know, bunch of guys in Antarctica. I don't know, assume doing they're researchers, because what else do you do in Antarctica? And then they come across this, like,
you can suntan.
Abandoned spaceship. Yeah, they come across this abandoned spaceship, and then they realize that there's a thing.
Yes.
That it's an alien life force, but what it does is it actually replicates human, not even only human, because it did a dog as well. So it, like, actually, like, takes on the form of living things. So it took on the form of a dog. It takes. So then essentially your dude, your friend who you've been there with for like a year doing research together is no longer actually your friend. It's actually this alien. And the cells of this alien force get in and like replicate and take over the person. And of course it's all murderous and, you know, bad and evil and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It doesn't end well.
No.
No, how can it end well? I mean, especially because it is a small bunch of, well, not a small, but like a bunch of people in Antarctica. There's no way, you can't escape. You can't escape, but you're stuck there. This thing is going to get you. But because it takes on the human form, it makes everybody paranoid about everybody else. So in a way, it's a little bit like a zombie type thing where it's like, you've just been bitten by the zombie, but you're hiding your bite mark because you're like, oh,
yeah,
they're going to kill me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that kind of vibe. You know, where it's like, oh, but is he who he says he is? And then, of course, everybody just gets paranoid at everyone else. Oh. So I like that aspect of it, the psychological aspect. But let's get on to the special effects, because I know that's what you want to talk about.
Holy shit. I mean, like, if you had a take, Steven Spielberg, if you're comparing with E.T., right? Steven Spielberg, I think, was working with LucasArts or whatever it was called then, Industrial Light and Magic, whatever it was. They were kind of like cutting edge. It's like, if you saw an effect in the 80s, remember now, you can watch it now and you go, oh, how did you even... But like, if you saw that in the 80s, like, holy shit, how did they make that happen? How? These guys didn't have that, but they didn't have that.
No, but let me tell you something. So the guy who did the special effects, he... also did special effects on RoboCop,
yes.
Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, I mean, he is the guy, right? Yeah. $1.5 million was spent on his special effects. Let me read what it says here. A mixture of chemicals, food products, rubber, and mechanical parts were turned by his large team into an alien capable of taking on any form.
Yeah, that computes. That computes.
It does, right? Spaghetti. The food products.
Spaghetti, man.
That's where like the melt
yes.
body horror type stuff comes in. There is a scene where, I mean, how would you describe it, Paolo? A giant insect with a human head. Like,
oh God. Like,
I don't even know how to do it. I will put the clip on Facebook.
I know. I'm looking at some of these photos and I'm trying to go, what? What actually, there must have been sense to some of these things. Because there's also...
No, so I must tell you.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, so that they were like, okay, well, what kind of creatures are we going to make, right? And they came up with these weird things. I mean, so the one... this is the scene I'm going to put. So basically, this one guy has a heart attack, and then this other guy's trying to resuscitate him, you know, with the defibrillator, right? And he's like got the defibrillator on the guy's chest and he's like pushing onto the guy's chest, trying to resuscitate him after his heart attack. And all of a sudden, you see this guy has been taken over by the thing, but nobody knows. All of a sudden, he puts the thing on the guy's chest collapses. It's like a shell, yes. An empty shell. The guy's arms go in and he's like teeth bite his arms off.
That's the thing. You know, because as I'm going through the video, there's a video that here, scenes, death by defibrillation. I'm like,
yes.
Fuck, what is that? That's the biting thing. That's the face thing I was talking about. Yes.
Oh, that's the face that you're talking about. Yes. Oh, no, because it's like an insect-y thing with the guy's face.
I remember that.
There's
a lot. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there is a lot. But they said, yeah, that they actually... There was a few special effects that actually got vetoed, believe it or not.
God.
So like there was weirder, worse shit that didn't make it to the movie.
What the hell would ever imagine that meeting?
Let me read this.
Okay, no, yes. This, oh, please tell me. Yes.
One abandoned idea included a series of dead baby monsters, which was deemed too gross.
Fuck, you see. Imagine that going, guys. I think we're really pushing it. I mean, really, guys. We're trying to make a serious film. We're still in Hollywood, people. This isn't Nollywood. This is try to keep our shit together.
Anyway, it's so worth watching for various reasons. Also, the theme music. The theme music is magnificent.
Yes.
It was done by Ennio Morricone.
Yes.
Like a proper composer.
I remember...
But the theme music makes the suspense that much better.
That's it. Remember when ringtones, polyphonic ringtones came out for your phone?
Yes.
And like that was just the coolest thing you could do with your phone? Think about that. Think about what you can do with your phone now. And 15 years ago, the coolest thing you could do was put a song on. That didn't even sound like the song. But I remember the theme songs of The Thing, Poltergeist, and The Godfather. Yes. Everybody had those. So it's like polyphonic ringtone fucking orgasm of The Thing theme song.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that's my recommendation.
What a recommendation. What a recommendation. Mm-hmm. That is, jeez, that's like, again, one of those movies, and you always do this. It goes, you cannot call yourself a fan of film, cinema, casual movie, pop culture, if you've not watched The Thing. That has to be on your like top 50 movies you need to watch before you die. So that is a great... The Thing 2011, don't. It's just not the same.
No, don't. Just don't. I mean, I didn't even know it existed until I started doing my research on this.
Yeah, like, I remember.
I was like, what? They made a remake? Like, it clearly did not... you know, like make any impact whatsoever.
Do you know what? They remastered the 1982 one, actually. If you watch it, Kurt Russell, like, so that's, it's like a 4K kind of remastering. Everything looks great. Rather watch that. So don't. All time top 50, you got to do it. My movie, right, is all time top 50 don't, as usual, right? So past couple of weeks... I've been going Disney Plus, easy.
Is this from Disney again?
No, it's not. Because surprisingly, I've watched all the 80s. There's only Revenge of the Nerds left, and we're not going to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So, I got a movie here. This movie was supposed to be part of a trilogy, right? It was supposed to be the third in a trilogy, but when they first started with the big star in the first two, by the time they got to this, he was so massive, right? They just couldn't afford him. And between getting the rights and him and whatever, they're like, oh, we actually can't get the rights to the first two and the same characters. So we're kind of going to do it, and he's kind of going to play the same role, but I'm going to change his name. But he's the same character. He's exactly the same character. Exactly kind of the follow-on from the first two, but it's not. Because it's just not, guys. It's just different. He's got a different name. It's just different. It's got a female lead. It's actually... Because a few weeks ago we spoke about Punisher, and I said it must have been one of the first Marvel comics turned into a movie. This, and it's on IMDb, so it can't be wrong, it's got to be true, it's the first Marvel comic that got turned into a full-length film, right, in the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the first one before the Punisher, 1985, first Marvel comic got turned into a feature-length movie. Now, our main character, it's all like... It's described as sword and sorcery film, right? So it's very epic. It's... Ah, oh, fuck it. You know what? I'm just going to give it. The movie is Red Sonja, okay? Which is a follow-on from Conan the Barbarian, right? So you had Right? So you had Conan the Barbarian. Okay. So that era, that style. Then you had Conan the Destroyer. And this was supposed to be the third in them. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, star of Conan the Barbarian... He was kind of unknown then, was so big by the time they got to this, they just couldn't afford him, nor the rights to the rest of the story. So they just said, you know what, we're going to go find some retconned Marvel comic, kind of put her in this world, and there's going to be Conan, but we're just going to call him Shmonen, the Barbarian, so that no one can sue us. His character was
really?
Named...
No, really. What's the name, really?
Lord Kalidor. But... I mean, you may as well call him Shmonen the Barbarian. I mean, it's the same character. It is Conan the Barbarian. It's Conan the Barbarian, but they just without the rights. So Shmonen. Okay, so I'll continue. His name's Kalidor Shmonen. Got it. Right. So the character Red Sonja, kind of like, this is kind of the story from the comic, the Marvel comic. Her whole family destroyed, everyone killed. She's left for dead, but she's not dead. And a goddess appears to her. Okay, and gives her powers. So it says, no, you need to get revenge on the people that did this, an evil queen, evil spirits. You need to get revenge, and I'm giving you my powers so that you can go get revenge on them. Okay, so now she's got the powers. She's got super strength, super fighting skills, healing, just a super warrior. But she's not allowed to sleep with anyone who does not defeat her in battle. Okay. This is true.
Huh?
This is part of the story. It's not porn.
Okay.
It's Shimon and the Shimomerian, Red Sonja. You know you're into it when...
I have a bone to pick with this, because would they have made that rule for a man?
Well, this is the thing, right? You have to know that this movie is that it's tagged as boobs, flesh. Those are tags for this movie, if you're going to do the SEO and the keyword stuff. Okay? So you're quite right. So now she's got these powers, and the evil queen, I couldn't quite make out what made her so evil, other than she was a lesbian. Like, I don't... It seemed to be the source of her villainy that she was attracted to other women. No. It was just like, because
you got it the wrong way around. She was a lesbian because she was evil.
Yeah, okay, yes, right. Okay, so this is how ridiculous it is. So she is kind of like the queen of these Amazonian warriors, and she's just evil because she likes women. So this is how stupid we're talking about in 1985. Red Sonja... She can only bonk someone if they beat her in battle. So off she goes on a quest. It's very quest. It's so stupid quest, right? Red Sonja is played by Bridget Nelson, right? She...
Nelson.
This is what I didn't know if it was Bridget or Brigitte. So Bridget...
Brigitte Nielsen.
Brigitte Nielsen.
I think we used to call her Bridget.
I think we did.
But it's 70 Nielsen. Nielsen. She was in Cobra, right? Remember she I was. Spoke about her
yes,
then?
She was in Cobra. She was in a lot of stuff. Mm. She was in a lot of stuff in the 80s. This was the first film. She was a model, and they said, and you can see she's a model. Give her a tiny little bikini warrior suit. All the men have warrior suits, big shields, all that. She got a metal bikini, right? And she quests around. But to your point of like, would they have done it for a man? They're trying to create this thing that she's a super warrior and she's got all this power. But at every key point in the battle, guess who comes up to save the day? Shimon and the Shimomerian. Okay, because obviously...
Shimon and the Shimomerian.
They couldn't afford him, because it was obviously supposed to be his quest. Because they couldn't afford him, there's these epic battle scenes, and then he just shows up and beats everybody, and then disappears again until the next part he's needed. I mean, it's so stupid that he's in.
So you think they filmed all his scenes on one day? We were like, okay, we're going to get you for one day, film all your scenes.
Factoid. Okay. They're calling it a glorified cameo. He was supposed to only be on for a week because they're only going to shoot these scenes. He only did the movie because of a favor to Dino De Laurentiis, who produced the first two, and he kind of felt that he owed like his career to this guy. Said, I'll do it as a favor, but like, here's my budget. Kept him on set for 4 weeks when he was only supposed to be on one, and quite rightly so. You can see it. You can see that he's just cut in. In fact, after this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger said, you know what? It's time for this to end naturally. I'm ending this relationship. It was good while it lasted, but this thing was a piece of shit. Okay. Dari, it is so ridiculous. It is such a ridiculous movie. It feels like a spoof sometimes. Okay? It feels like...
I don't even remember at all. Like, it was not in my brain as a thing that existed.
It's one of my all-time favorites. It is so stupid. It is ridiculous. Like, I mean, you can see a helicopter. There's a helicopter. At one point, you can see a helicopter, right? There's fight scenes where obviously contractually or not contractually, they shot the scene, Schwarzenegger and Shimon are supposed to be in it, but they've shot it so badly that like he's obviously not in it. The characters, everyone's over the top. It is so badly acted. The story is so stupid. It is glorious. Arnold Schwarzenegger says it's one of the worst films he's ever made. I've got a quote here from him. Let me see here. So he says that there was a stage where he used to discipline these kids with this movie. That said, if you don't behave, I'm going to make you watch it. And he said, his kids behave. Never had.
It's a punishment.
It's a punishment. He had started dating Maria Shriver at this time. And him and Bridget Nielsen actually had an affair, right? Oh, in the movie, Bridget Nielsen and Shimonen, Red Sonja and Shimonen, they fight. But they don't beat each other because you think, okay, they're going to fight. Obviously, he's going to beat her. He's going to ravage her. And because that's the only way she can lay with a man. No, equal draw. Right? And they actually had an affair. Because Schwarzenegger's like, well, fuck, I'm here for 4 weeks. Wait, What am I going to, you know, what am I going to do? Right? These nipples aren't going to rub themselves. But he was dating Maria Shriver at the time. Maria Shriver admitted quite recently, she only revealed this quite recently, that no, they did have an affair. And at the premiere, she said, if this doesn't kill your career, nothing will. That's what she told Arnie.
Jeez.
He considers it one of the worst movies. No.
It didn't kill his career.
Bulletproof. And he's actually never does bad movies, Schwarzenegger. You got to give him that. He's been in a lot of stuff, a lot of potential. His movies are normally pretty good. So this was kind of the first tester of it where he played Shmonen. Red Sonja, give it a watch. It is so bad. It's so bad, it's brilliant. It's so bad, it's hilarious. Like, Siskel and Ebert at the time, they laughed during the premiere because they actually were like, is this a comedy? Like, what's actually happening here? Oh, good movies. Good movies this week. Red Sonja and...
Sure. Yeah. And we went early 80s. Well, what year is Red Sonja from?
1985. So...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the first two Conans...
It feels like it should be earlier, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously Conan, the movies, the proper Conans... were early 80s.
Those are mid 80s.
Yeah. This is kind of like, and you can imagine Schwarzenegger, like just how massive he was at this point. I mean, he was I think this was a year before Terminator.
Probably, yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, around about there. Let me confirm. Let me just double check. Oh, it was a year after Terminator. Yeah. So between Conan, he did Terminator. Same year he did Commando. And same year he did Raw Deal. A year later does Raw Deal. Then he gets into Predator. So, yeah, this is like after Terminator. So he's just too big. He's just massive. So you can see that happen. Good movies. The Thing and Red Sonja. Will you watch mine if I watch yours?
I'm not making any promises. Okay. But I'll tell you what. I'll watch it if you watch The Princess Bride.
There's a Princess Bride vibe to it, actually, not gonna lie. You know what the irony is, right? The amount of shit movies I watch and I don't watch a Princess Bride. I take it personally.
And it's so great and you will really like it, but it's fine. Carry on being stubborn about it.
I'll take it personally. I wanna talk to you quickly about Bruce Springsteen, Dori.
Okay, all right.
The boss, man of the people, right? He's built his whole career about being working class boy, made it big. Okay? And I'm right to say that.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
He gets it. And that's a huge part of his fan base. Like, working class people in America, he's huge. Like, he's just huge in, like, that real, like, what are we going to say? I want to say, like, just working class guy. He's just blue collar, working class guy, the hero, the voice of the people. A lot of his early songs are about that, and people just resonate. So he's going back on tour, right? His US tour in 2023 with the E Street Band. And tickets have gone on sale recently. So it's on Ticketmaster.
Yeah?
Ticketmaster have a thing which I kind of seen here, but I also saw it on Ticketmaster when I was in Ireland and we bought tickets for Ed Sheeran. They do this. They got a thing called dynamic pricing, right? Which is kind of like Uber surge pricing, but without the money laundering and the racketeering. Okay. So it basically goes, the more people trying to buy tickets at that time, the more expensive the tickets will be. Okay. So it's kind of like if there's a surge on the site and the tickets will just go up dynamically, and then when no one's dropped, they'll drop. So it's kind of like this game you got to play, right, to get it. In our experience, we scored because, I don't know, we got Ed Sheeran tickets for ridiculously cheaper and really good tickets. But this kind of works the other way. If you went on through this dynamic pricing, man of the people, Bruce Springsteen, you could expect to pay between $4,000 and $5,000 for like a mid-floor ticket. We're not even talking Golden Circle.
What?
We're talking average.
What? Dollars.
Dollars.
I mean, that's bad enough in rand.
That is very.
That's insane.
That's mad. So some people are like.
So basically, you have to be rich to be able to go see Bruce Springsteen.
That's
rubbish.
The irony. So
the irony.
Ticketmaster say, oh no, we're selling tickets at an average of $200 a ticket, right? And only like a small percentage are going at 1,000. But this is not people's experience. People are saying, no. The majority of these tickets are fetching prices up to $4,000. There's no such thing as $200. Okay? And we're Ticketmaster saying. I also saw it myself. I think a local site does it. I bought rugby tickets the other day, and I also think a local site does something very similar in surging pricing, because like the kind of like cheapish range tickets, they just never ever there. So, but we know Springboks rugby, it's money making. Bruce Springsteen supposed to be man of the people.
The people who have to pay more must be so pissed off. Like,
yeah,
how is it? It's just bad.
But what do you do if you love the boss? If you love the boss, you can only go watch.
Can't love him that much.
I don't love anyone that much to pay. I mean, what are we talking about? $4,000. $4,000? Is it like, I think it's like 60,000 rand? Am I right?
Yeah. Yes.
God. To go eat a... I mean, it's one thing seeing the show mid-level. Think about the shitty food you got to eat, the parking. Oh, I just feel tired just thinking about all that effort. Oh, I'm not paying that to see anybody except the ghost of George Michael. Then we're going to talk. Then we'll talk.
Mm.
And they stay
then
on.
We'll
seven.
Take the second bond
for the ghost of George Michael. Dari, what a week it has been. It's flown by. I really thought, what are we going to do? We had extra songs. We didn't get into them. We didn't even save some stuff for next week. If you want, next week we'll give you a teaser. Got a story about, if you ever wondered what happened to Stringfellow Hawk, Jean-Michel Vincent, if he titillated you during Airwolf as Stringfellow Hawk,
I've spoken about him before on the show. Mm. We know what happened,
got the full
but
story.
But we will revisit that because,
Yeah, we definitely will. So fun week this week. We spoke about Vigo the Carpathian, the real evil man, Mike and the Mechanics doing good things. Spoke about terrible movies and a great movie. One terrible movie, one great movie. Everything we spoke about on that 80 Show essay on Facebook. Or just look, go into the Google and just go, that 80 Show essay, and you'll find it in a format that works for you. Dari, what did you learn from this week's show?
Are you kidding?
Yes.
I mean, what didn't I learn from this week's show? First, there was the Anthony Edwards bomb that you dropped on me at the beginning.
Wow.
Right.
Huge.
Then you told me all about Vigo the Carpathian.
Evil man.
Like the real story.
Evil bastard.
Behind that.
Dickhead.
Learned all about that. But I think the thing I like most that I learned this week is the word Shmonen, the Shmarbarian.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. You didn't afford the rights. It's just a similar character.
Damn it.
Shmonen the Shmom Shmerian, this has been the Shmeri Shmo. Thanks for joining me, Dari. Goodbye.
Bye.